All right, well, say good morning. Let's begin. So we're going to begin actually from Chaf Beis Amud Aleph. I know it was Shabbos, so all of you went ahead after where the shir ended yesterday morning. So Amir Tzashim, what else is there to do on Shabbos but learn Daf Yomi? So we're going to pick up actually on Chaf Beis Amud Aleph, Tani Dibei Rabbi Chiya. It's 2, 4, 6, 7 lines down from the top. So I turned it on. I'm not that technologically challenged. Thank you, Moshe. All right, so we're gonna begin today speaking a little bit about Tani Dibei Rabbi Chiya. So the Gemara says the following: Tani Dibei Rabbi Chiya. So the yeshiva, the Tana of the yeshiva Rabbi Chiya said the following. Now, we're gonna be referring to this flow chart that you have over here. So this is, remember, we're in the topic of Shnios. The previous Mishnah introduced the idea that there are certain, when we speak about an Erva, there are certain concepts ultimately of Erva, biblical Erva, and then there's a whole another grouping of Shnios, of rabbinically prohibited Ervos. So I will say, remember, if you're trying to necessarily find a rhyme or reason for these things, there's not necessarily a clear and understandable pattern. Essentially, the Torah prohibited certain relationships, most of them stemming from a paternal link from one's father's family. And there are a whole other kind of mirror relationships that are biblically permitted, but the rabbis said are prohibited. So the Gemara says the fine. Tanya Rabbi Chiya. Shlishi shebibno v'shebibito. Let's do them one at a time. The third generation stemming from one's son or from one's daughter. So we'll say, if you look in the flow chart over here, if you look towards the middle of the flow chart, you see where it says man? You see where it says man? Good. Please just verbally acknowledge that you're listening. Good, thank you. Good, sorry, thank you. I'm just asking for a yes. So, okay, so you see the man again. So we'll say, so this case over here of Shlishi Shebibno Ushebibito, we see under the man you have son and daughter. So if you count three generations down, you will see the four gray boxes. The daughter's daughter's daughter, daughter's son, daughter, son's daughter's daughter, and son's son's daughter. So this is what Rabbi Chiya is referring. It sounds more complicated than it is, but that's the beauty of the flowchart. And Rosa, again, if you notice this flowchart, this is why I used it. I think I looked at a couple of them. I think this is the clearest one. So remember, the boxes in gray are the Shnios. So Rabbi Chiya introduces these additional Shnios that are the offspring of one's son and one's daughter. Next, the Sheba Ben Ishto. Sheva ben Ishto. So again, the case of ben Ishto is the wife's son. So if you just go over on the chart, if you have from man, you have that black line going across to wife. So then you have wife's son. So again, counting three generations down, again, you have the wife's son's daughter's daughter, the wife's son's daughter. The Sheba Bas Ishto, so I grouped those two together, the wife's son and the wife's daughter. In all of these cases are Shnia. So we'll say in all of these situations, these are all Shnios. So essentially, what we just covered is the entire bottom line of this flow chart. So the entire bottom line, which again, essentially are the Shnios that come directly from the man himself, right? Direct descendants of the man, and Shnios that come from the man's wife. Next. Revi Shebechamav v'Shebechamoso. Shni, similarly, the fourth generation going up. Now these are all generations coming down. Similarly, again, four generations or four different groupings going up, four generations up from one's wife. Now, if you go back to the flow chart and you look again on the wife side, you go from man to wife, and you look up. Now, again, the Gemara calls this four generations. Now, this is four generations, including the wife herself. So it's wife, her parents, going all the way up to the top of the flowchart, where you see father-in-law's father's mother, father-in-law's mother's mother, mother-in-law's mother's mother, mother-in-law's father's mother. These are four generations up, including one's wife. These are all shnios as well. So now the Gemara asks, I'm going to Ravina Ravashi. So Ravina asks Ravashi, Maishno lemala de kachashav le ishto, umaishno lemata de lo kachashav le ishto. Well, so the Gemara asks a very interesting question. Why is it that when we reckon the generations above the wife, we include the wife in the numbering of the generations? Meaning, when we want to speak about, again, father-in-law's father's mother, father-in-law's mother's mother, mother-in-law's mother's mother, mother-in-law's father's mother, good? All right? So remember, we call all of those the fourth generation. Now, how do you get the fourth generation? That's including if you say that the wife is generation one. So wife is generation one. Her parents are generation two. Her grandparents are generation three. Her great-grandparents are generation four. Oh, because the Gemara says, yet, when reckoning down, we don't count the wife in the generations, right? When reckoning upwards, so remember again, we call the Shnios on the top of the flowchart the fourth generation. That includes the wife. Yet, when we speak about the Shnios that are descended from the wife, i.e., the first four boxes on the bottom of the flowchart, all the way to the left, those are called what? Those are called third generation, which means what? We are not counting the wife in the way we count the generation. So again, Ravina's just asking a technical question, right? Why is it that going upwards we reckon the wife, and why is it on the going downwards descendants? Let me say it differently. Why is it that when looking at the ancestors we include the wife, but when looking at the descendants we do not include the wife? So the Gemara says,
"Umay." That previous marriage, right? From a previous marriage, father-in-law, mother-in-law, on the left.
No, it doesn't have to be. Doesn't have to be. Doesn't have to be. You could totally use your imagination with this case. Go wild. Right? It can be any variation. The only case where it might be independent children is in the husband's and the wife, the man and the wife's children. Those you could see are clearly reckoned separately.
So that's man's mother and father when they're talking about mother and father for the wife.
No, of course not. Okay. Of course not. That's, you can see that clearly on the flowchart.
Yeah.
So the Gemara says the following. So Umashna Lamata Deloka Khajivle the Ishto. So the Gemara says like this. The Gemara says, Lamala the Surah Mikwa. Also listen to this. Lamala the Surah Mikwach Ishto Kaasi. So it's very simple. When you look at the wife's ancestors, so the nature of those prohibitions on the man are all a result of what? Of his relationship to the wife. Therefore, again, Chashivla, therefore, again, at the end of the day, therefore, she's counted as part of the generation. Meaning, again, the reason why for this man, all of the people on the top of the flow chart are Shnios is why? Because of his relationship to his wife. Therefore, again, she is part of the Shnia reckoning as well. And that's that she's counted as generation number one. However, Lamata, the Isura Lav Mikoach Ishto Kasi, Loka Chashivla, but Rabbi said, when looking at the man's descendants, these shnios that are reckoned on the bottom towards the right-hand side of the flowchart have nothing to do with his wife. Because of that, ultimately, again, she is not included in the generational reckoning. Therefore, I will say, once we're doing that for him, we're also going to do that for her as well. So essentially, again, what the Gemara is essentially answering is, when looking at the shnios on top, the wife's ancestors, because those shnios are a result of his relationship with her, therefore, by definition, she is included in the generational reckoning. However, again, when we look at the shnios that come from the man's own descendants, because those have nothing to do with her, therefore she's not counted, and therefore we just apply that same standard when looking at the descendants of her shnios as well. Vaha ben ishto ubas ishto, the isura mikach ishto kaasi v'lo kachashavet. So that answer works fine for his own descendants. What about the shnios that are the result of her descendants, where again those shnios are result of her, therefore we should include her in the generational reckoning, the same way that we include in the generational reckoning of her ancestors, to which the Gemara says, I di ditana shlosha doros lamata didei v'lo chashva, tananami gimel doros lamata dida v'lo chashva, to which the Gemara says, essentially what we just mentioned before, we're trying to create some degree of textual symmetry. So I must say, looking back at this flow of a chart for just a moment, when you look at the shnios that are the direct descendants of the man, so remember again, towards the right-hand side of the flow chart, which essentially would be the bottom four gray boxes, those shnios obviously have nothing to do with the woman. Therefore, of course, she's not counted. So therefore, we just apply the same standard when looking at the shnios that are directly descendant of her, which is on the bottom left-hand side of the flow chart, and therefore we don't include her in the generational reckoning as well. I'm the Rav Ashi, the Rav Kana. So we'll say, let's go.
You mean that this whole side would ever?
That's not true. Remember, these are his descendants. No, not from her, not necessarily from her. We'll say, remember, again, that's the whole chap. Remember, this is supposed to help you. So remember, again, if you'll notice, you have the line from man to woman, but there is no line that connects them to the offspring. These are two different lines of offspring. This is the man's offspring and the woman's offspring that they may have had from a previous marriage.
Right.
So therefore, again, not together. So that's why over here the whole chap is like this. These are the shniyos that descend from him. These are the shniyos that descend from her. So again, let me show you what the Gemara essentially said visually. So therefore, again, when looking at these top individuals over here, right, all of these are the ancestors of the wife. The only reason why all of these people are a shniya to this man is because he married her. Therefore, by definition, she is included in the generational reckoning, and that's why, again, lemaisa, again, we call these people the fourth generation, because it really it's 1, 2, 3, 4. However, again, when looking downwards, remember, so since essentially, when we look at the man, these are called the third generation. Therefore, even though technically speaking, one could call the wife's shnios, the wife's descendant shnios, you could call those fourth generation, including her, but essentially we just try to keep it symmetrical. Since for him, his descendants are the third, therefore we call the descendants of his wife the third generation as well. So the Gemara goes back there. Very, truth is, not this flowchart, when you see these, it looks scary. But the truth is, Lamaisa, it's actually very straightforward. So the Gemara says the following. Amri Rav Ashi Rav Kahana. So Rav Ashi said to Rav Kahana, Shnios Rav Chiyah, this is actually very interesting. Yesh lahen hefsik, o ein lahen hefsik. So we'll say, here's what's fascinating. So when you look at this flowchart, how do you look at this? Is this the end of the story? Or do we say that these Shnios designation continue to what? Continue to go down and continue to go up. Now obviously, the continuing to go up is not going to be such a kasha because, you know, already if you're dealing with your father-in-law's father's mother, you know, even if she looks good for her age, you know, how far back, like just logically, are you going to go? Much we're gonna have to edit that afterwards. Like, right, how far back are you gonna really have to go? So obviously, the real kasha comes up. I'm sorry. She has money here, right? Oh, I didn't think about that. I get so much from giving this shiur. It's amazing. So obviously, going down, however, the shaila is, do these shniyos designation continue or not? So the Gemara says, Tashma, do amarav, dalid noshim, yeshlan hefsik visulo. So what's it? The Gemara quotes the statement of Rav, which we had on yesterday's daf, who said that four women, ultimately, again, the shnios get cut off and no one else. So this sounds like, again, that was only a din in the four women mentioned by Rav, but in Rabbi Chiya's model, in fact, the shnia designation would continue generation after generation after generation, to which the Gemara says, Dilma ki ka'amar, Rav lahimas nisa. Not necessarily, maybe Rav was just specifically referring to this particular Mishnah. Tashma, Shlishi Urevi'i in Tfelo. So we'll say again, now the Gemara tries to prove this point from Chiyah's statement himself. So Rabbi Chiyah said that when Rabbi Chiyah talks about the Shneos, he says it goes up to the third generation, that's referring to the descendants, or up to the fourth generation, that's ancestors. So it sounds like when Rabbi Chiyah is saying that, he's saying Dafka, that's the ceiling, that's the ceiling and the floor, meaning it goes no further. Remember, this is all rabbinic in nature. So it sounds like Rabbi Chiyah is saying that the rabbinic Shneos only extends four generations up and three generations down. That's the cap. To which the Gemara says, Ashishi Revi'in Tfelo. To which the Gemara says, maybe not. Dilma Mishlishi Ve'elech Mirevi'i Ve'elech. Maybe not. Maybe what Rav Chiyah is saying is that the prohibition actually extends from the fourth generation upwards and from the third generation downward. Amar Le Rava Rav Nachman. So Rav said to Rav Nachman, there was a particular time Chachamu came from Arav. Arav is the Western Eretz Yisrael. So the Gemara leaves that question. The Gemara leaves that question ultimately again open. The way the Rambam paskins is that Lamaisa, according to Rabbi Chiyah, which is the way we pass like Rabbi Chiyah, these shniyos are capped. So meaning again, any subsequent generation would not be prohibited midrabanan. Again, remember, because to prohibit anyone else could already be getting into gezera legezera, already heaping on additional layers of rabbinic prohibition. So it seems to be that the consensus is this is where it's capped.
Only down.
Both down and up. So upwards is capped at four. Downwards is capped at three. Right. Very often it becomes a moot point just because, again, just from an aging perspective. But let me say again, it's capped. Fine. So now the Gemara raises another kasha. So Amar, they asked the following kasha in Eretz Yisrael. So this is actually very interesting. Gazru Shnios Begerim, O lo Gazru Shnios Begerim. And both say, did they decree these Shnios in a case of a convert or not? And I both say, take a look at Rashi for just a moment. Look at Rashi. Rashi says over here, Begerim, Gazru Shnios, Shem Haya Ger Nasui Eim Imo Yosef. Now watch this. Let's say a ger, a convert, marries his mother's mother. His mother's mother. Now again, nothing to do with Rabbi Chiya's model. Now your mother's mother, technically speaking, is mutter midoraisa. Is mutter midoraisa. Asr midrabanan. So let's say a ger went ahead and married, Rashi says over here, Aim Imo, he married his mother's mother. So the Shaila is, do we say, I keep losing that Rashi, right? Shimhaya ger nasui aim imo yotzi. Now remember, again, let's say a person who is born Jewish, which means he has Jewish paternity. So if a Jew would marry his mother's mother, we'd force him to get divorced because that's asur midrabanan. What about a ger? Now what's the novelty of this kasha? The novelty of this kasha is, remember, as they're going to see, ger shen, first of all, two things. Number one, his mother's mother is not Jewish. The other piece also is ger shen iskar kekatan shenola dami. When a person converts, so there's a rebirth, and that rebirth means what? That the truth is, again, we don't halachically recognize their connection to their biological family. Now we'll see, we say that, but it's not totally true. We do recognize certain bonds to their biological family, but from a halachic perspective, that's not their family. So what do we do with that? So the Gemara says, Amrle hashta, listen to this. Uma erva gufa. Now the Gemara says, when it comes to an erva itself, Ilav, I'll read this first and then we'll explain it. Ilav shelo yomru ban mikidusha chamur lekidusha kala lo gozibu rabbanon. Now we'll say, watch this. Let's say a man converts, Reuven converts, and his sister converts. They both convert. And they want to marry each other. So mutter or aser? It's mutter. Technically speaking, it should be mutter. Gershon eskayer kekatan shenola dami, right? They're both reborn. The halacha does not recognize, again, their biological link. Technically speaking, they should be permitted. However, the Rabbanan said you can't do that. Why can't you do that? So it's actually very interesting verbiage. Because you would say, people will say, ba'in mikadusha chamura l'kadusha kala. Because here's the interesting anomaly about this. Before they converted, remember again, b'nei Noach, also have to keep a moral code. Part of that moral code is what's prohibited? Incest. Arayos, you can't marry a sister. So how could it be that converting will allow them to do something that they were not able to do when they were Gentiles? So people will say that converting to Judaism actually gives you a relaxed moral code. So we'll say what the Gemara is essentially saying is, mid-oraisa, it's fine. Mid-rabbanim, the rabbi stepped in and said, no, you can't do it, because again, people are going to think that there's a relaxed code of morality within Judaism. Now, boss, so what that's saying is, there's erva itself that's permitted, technically speaking, when you convert. So shnios mi boy. The Rabbi says, is it even a kasha by a shnios? That again, so what you see is, if even technical erva, what we would call technical erva, is technically permitted, but the rabbi stepped in and prohibited, so should it be even a kasha? Of course, shnios should be permitted as well. Rav Nachman says no. Hoil. Gerim. So it appears to be based on this Gemara that Lamaisa, the din of Shnios, would not apply to Gerim. Since technically speaking, even some of the Arayos don't apply to Gerim. And again, also, when I say don't apply to Gerim, it's not really don't apply to Gerim. It's a reality of the Ger's circumstances. The Ger is reborn. And also, what we see is, bless you, that is not just like a nice, beautiful, metaphysical idea. That is a halachic idea. That the relationships that the Ger had ultimately, again, are halachically severed upon conversion. And again, it's only the rabbis who stepped in and say, you can't do that because it doesn't look right. It doesn't look right that people are going to say that you're coming from Kedusha Chamura to Kedusha Kala. So if that's the case, that by technically speaking, Arayos, they're permitted. So it goes without saying that what? That they're not governed by the laws of Shnios either. Doraisa. We'll see where that comes from. They don't have a din of kibbutz aveim.
There is more than any other. No other
covered. Correct. No other difference. Correct. There is no, because remember, from a halachic perspective, that biological parent is not considered their halachic parent. You're not permitted to mistreat them. Semikavod abrios, but there's no din of kibbutz aveim. No din of kibbutz aveim. That is correct. So the Gemara says, fine. Now, again, you know, I will tell you, I've dealt with the situation that people have converted. So, you know, the conventional wisdom is, you know, you can't be a good Jew if you don't honor the people that brought you into this world, even if you're not halachically obligated to do so. You know, so it's an interesting, so it's a very, it's a, but the answer is from a halachic perspective, the answer is no. The answer is no, you're not obligated. I'm sorry. It's a lot of controversial stuff today. So the Gemara says the following. The Gemara says, Rav Nachman says, Gerim ha'wil va'asul yadan neima b'hu milsam. I both say you should know. We'll spend a significant amount of time speaking about Gerim, both in Maseches Yevamos as well as in Ksubas. There's a lot of very interesting situations that come up. In any event, the Gemara says, Rav Nachman says, essentially, since we started talking about Gerim, let's spend a little bit more time speaking about neima b'hu milsam. Achin min ha'ein lo ya'idu. I both say if you have maternal brothers. Now remember again, this is maternal brothers. These are talking about brothers who converted. Two men who converted who share the same biological mother. They should not testify in court. Rashi says lo ya'idu lechatrila de korvas ein begerim korvehi dahavada imor. I both say, and I watch this. So the Gemara is like this. You shouldn't have, obviously, this is not a din in gerim over, it's a din in brothers. Right? So brothers shouldn't, relatives can't testify in court. So I'd be tempted to say like this. You know what? If let's say I have Reuben and Shimon converted. They're biological brothers. They converted. So I'd say, should they be able to testify in court? Of course. Why? Based on what we just said, that if when a person converts, essentially, again, they're reborn, they have no halachic connection, even to biological Gentile parents, they should be able to convert. Yet the Gemara says, Rav Nachman says, they shouldn't convert. Why? Now Rashi points out, if we look at Rashi for just a moment. Testify. Right, I'm sorry. They shouldn't testify. Rashi says, lo ya'idu l'chatchila. They shouldn't testify l'chatchila. Why? D'korvas ein begerim korvahi. Because we recognize what? We recognize their connection to their biological mother. Why do we recognize their connection to their biological mother? D'ha vadai imohi. I will say, interestingly enough, if there's one thing you can't contest in life, it's what? It's who your mother is. It's who your mother is. Because Lamais, again, there's clear, incontrovertible proof that what? That she birthed you. So meaning, even though technically speaking, when they convert, those biological bonds are not recognized halachically, but to a certain degree, Rav Nachman says they are. We know they came from the same womb, they came from the same mother. So they are brothers, for sure in a biological sense, even if we don't recognize that halachically. Therefore what? They really should not testify together. However, again, v'me'idu edusan edus. If they did testify together, then what? Then the ma'aseh, again, it's okay. Meaning, again, so l'chatchila they shouldn't, because the ma'aseh, they do share, it's a clear, uncontestable biological bond. But the ma'aseh, if they did testify together, their edus is acceptable. However, and again, this is actually interesting, min ha'av, if they are only paternal brothers, they go ahead and they share a father, me'idin l'chatchila. We allow them to go ahead and testify together in Beis Din L'chatchila. Why is that? Rashi says, Mi'idin L'chatchila, D'rachmona afgerei l'zera mitzri, D'chsev zermas susim zermasam, Hilchach korvas av eino korva. I will say, this is actually very interesting from a halachic perspective. Now, this might sound a little bit strange. How does anyone really know that their father is their father? Right? I know my mother before DNA testing, right? I know that my mother is my mother because she gave birth to me. How does a person know that their father is their father? Maybe the mother had a relationship with another man. So halachically, we deal with this issue. How do we deal with this issue? We say, it's actually fascinating, we say that even if a woman was with another man, we say, rov bi'ilos acharabal. The assumption is that even if chas v'shalom, she did have a relationship with another man, the assumption is the majority of her intimacy was with her husband, and therefore the statistical probability is that my father is my father. Put it on a Father's Day card, by the way. This is great. You know? thank you for being most probably my father, right? Right? You know, so again, but halachically, right? Hallmark should get their hands on this one, right? So halachically, this is how we assume that our fathers are our father. However, again, the Gemara says that by the nations of the world, again, where promiscuity is much more rampant, therefore, again, you don't necessarily have the same chazakah. So the Gemara says if you have two men and they converted, if they share the same mother, there is a clear, definitive biological link. If they just share the same father, then halachically, we view it as if there's no link at all. V'haraya, we allow them to testify together in court, l'chatchila. If they share the same mother, l'chatchila, they shouldn't testify. If they did, we accept it because halachically they're converted, they're like they're reborn. But if they share the same paternal link, halachically, it's not recognized at all, and the l'chatchila could go ahead and testify in court together. Amemar said, no, afilu achin min ha'ein, mi'idin l'chatchila. Amemar says, it's not true. Even brothers who share the same mother, l'chatchila, are permitted to go ahead and testify in court together. Because again, Amimar says, listen, if we're going to really say, let me just read it. So the Gemara says like this. Amir says, l'chatchila, even brothers who share a mother could go ahead and testify. But one second, what about Arayos? Meaning we just said before that what? That Lamaisa, when let's say a brother and sister convert, technically speaking, what? They could marry each other, but we rabbis say we don't let that. Why? Because it can't be that converting is going to allow you to do something that you couldn't do when you were a Gentile. So if that's the case, then why allow the brothers who share the same mother to go ahead and testify in court together? To which the Gemara answers, it's very simple, Umay shno me'arayos, Erba Masrul Akol, because they're both saying everybody gets married. Hopefully everybody gets married. And at some point in time. Therefore, Lamais, again, the concern is that if we allow this brother and sister to go ahead and marry, people will erroneously assume that this particular erva is permitted. However, Beisdin, Eidos la Beisdin Masura, right? But however, testimony, again, not everybody can testify. You have to show up in a Beisdin, and Beisdin decides who testifies and who doesn't testify. The Gershin is Kayer Kekatan Shinola Dami, and someone who converts, ultimately, again, it's as if they've been reborn. So, essentially, what I mean says is the following. At the end of the day, when someone converts, it's as if they've been reborn. Therefore, and that's our principle. And therefore, Amimar says, therefore, even if two men, Reuben and Shimon, in their previous life, you know, we'll call them John and Jack. So John and Jack shared a common mother. Now they convert. We don't recognize that common maternity halachically. Therefore, they are permitted to show up in Beis Din, and they're permitted to go ahead and testify with one another. But also, the reason we could say that is because, again, Lamaisa, Beis Din regulates testimony. However, again, we are not going to allow a man to marry his sister from his Gentile life. Why? Because that could very easily, chas v'shalom, lead to what? To an erosion of the principles of morality within the Jewish community. Because Beis Din regulates testimony, Beis Din could go ahead and say that even if they share a common mother, they could still testify. But to allow him to marry his sister from his Gentile days, that we can't do, because at the end of the day, that'll lead to a wholesale erosion of moral standards within the Jewish community. Says the Mishnah. It's really fascinating Gemara. Mishi yeshlo ach mikol makom, zokek es eshes achiv liyimus. Rabbosai, if somebody has a brother, any kind of brother. Now we'll discuss exactly what this means. If you have any kind of brother, it'll obligate your widow, meaning this referring, let's say, the deceased brother. So if the deceased brother has any kind of brother, it obligates his widow, in yibum. Okay. V'achivu l'chol davar, and he says, brother in all matters, chutz mimi shiyish lo'ach min ha'shivcha u'min ha'vedas kochavim. With the exception of what? One who has a half-brother, meaning that his father fathered a child with either a Gentile woman or a shivcha, or a servant, a slave woman. So again, in those cases, again, that's not considered my brother at all. So the Gemara says, therefore, and that's case number one. Mishi yesh lo ben mikol makom. Similarly, if someone has a son, this is talking about, again, Reuven has a son, mikol makom, any kind of son, poter es eshes aviv min hayibum. The existence of that son will what? Will exempt his father's wife from yibum. So let's remember again, a man doesn't have to have a child with the woman who he's currently married to in order for his current wife to be exempt from Yibum. What the Mishnah is saying over here is if the man has any son, he has a son from another relationship, from a previous relationship, the existence of that son exempts his current widow from Yibum.
Rabbi, what about if the two brothers, one had converted?
I don't know. Let's get through these cases first. Then we'll throw in variant cases later. So now, only because let's keep on this. And Abbas says, similarly again, if that son, now we don't know who this son is, but if that son goes ahead and curses his father, hits his father, he's chayiv for all of those things. And Abbas says, we'll define what these cases are. And he is his son for all matters. The exception of what Rabbi says, someone who has a son with a Gentile woman or with a shifcha, with a maidservant, Rabbi says, that is, if I have a son with a shifcha or a maidservant, that is not my son. That is not considered to be my son, which means again, that Lamaise, again, that son would not exempt my widow from Yibum. That son, if he hurt me, if he hit me, if he cursed me, would not be chayiv for the act of hitting or cursing his father. Says the Gemara. Now, let's analyze these cases. So essentially now, we have two cases. One case of the brother, one case of the son. Mikol makol nasi ma. So also remember, the Mishnah began with very interesting wording. The Mishnah says that someone who has any kind of, literally, ach mikol makom means any kind of brother. Now, what does that mean, any kind of brother? La'asuye mai, Rabbi Yehuda, oh, la'asuye mamzer. My brother is a mamzer. And I will say, again, many people say that, right? But again, this actually means over here a real mamzer, meaning I will say that the father went ahead. So let's just get this family tree in order over here. You have Yaakov. Yaakov is married to Leah, and with Leah, he has Reuven. But Yaakov also had another relationship, let's call it with his mother-in-law. And he fathered a child with his mother-in-law, an Erva, or with another woman. You can fill in the blank, it doesn't really matter who it is. But it's another Erva, someone who was prohibited to him through the penalty of death, Misas Bezin or Kares. He fathers another child, and that child is Mamish a Mamzer. So let's call that child Shimon. So now, I will say, Shimon is related to Reuven. But whereas Reuven, again, is 100% kosher, right? Reuven is the result of the union between Yaakov and Leah. Shimon is a mamzer, but yet Shimon is Reuven's paternal brother. So the Gemara says, it comes to include, which means what Rabbi says. So listen to this. So now if Reuven dies without children, then what? Then Lemaisa, again, Reuven's widow will fall before Shimon, who's a mamzer for Yibam. Now, we already learned what's going to happen in that case, right? Chalitza. We're going to mandate chalitza in that case, because remember, again, we saw this, this is exciting, because we saw this sugya. Because what happens? Technically, Yibum should be allowed. Why? Little Chazara, why should Yibum be allowed? Oh, excellent, because asei dochelos asei. Because the asei of Yibum will be dochelos asei, marrying a mamzer. But that only works for what? The biarishona. Doesn't work for the subsequent bios, and therefore halacha lamaisa, we force chalitza. So the Gemara says, pshita, so that's obvious. Achivu. Of course, even though Shimon's a mamzer, Shimon is still Reuven's paternal brother, so it's obvious that there will be Yibum. So Shimon said, I'll tell you why. Now, the Temor, I've thought, Leiliv, Ach va'acham ibn Yaakov. I might have thought, remember we saw this before? There's already a Gzirah Shava of Achim, or Ach, from the sons of Yaakov, and I would have said the following, between Yibum and Yaakov, Ma, lahalan k'sherim v'lo psulin, just like by the sons of Yaakov, all 12 of them were k'sherim. Genealogically fit. I would have thought that the Gzeres Shavah between Avachim and Achim teaches you that what? That Yibum also only occurs with who? With genealogically fit brothers. Kamash Molon, no. Kamash on that Yibum even occurs even if the surviving brother is a literal halachic mamzer. So the Gemara says, one second, the Ema Hachinami. But why is that? I mean, how do you know that? What? Maybe this indeed is the halacha. That's what? That Lemaisa, again, only a brother who's genealogically fit can perform Yibum. But if he's genealogically unfit like a mamzer, Lemaisa said, maybe there's no Yibum. To which the Gemara says, I'll tell you why. Kevan de le'inyan Yibum, niftar. Ah, I'll tell you what I will say. Since we know that what? That the existence of a mamzer will go ahead and what? Exempt the widow from Yibum. Once we're going to see this case very shortly. Let's say again, same case. Yaakov was married to Leah. Yaakov went ahead and fathered a mamzer with another woman. He committed adultery and he had a mamzer. Now what happens? But he never has children with Leah. Now he dies childless with Leah. Does Leah have to do Yibum? No. Why? Because Yaakov does have a child. Yeah, granted, the kid's a mamzer, but he still has a child. So just like I know that the existence of the mamzer will exempt the widow from Yibum, so too again, Mizkak Nami Zakik, so too again, the existence of a mamzer brother will also create an obligation for Yibum. So I will say, again, therefore, Lamaisa, the first thing the Mishnah is teaching us is that any kind, that's what it means, any kind of brother, which means even a genealogically unfit brother is a brother nevertheless, and therefore will be required to do Yibum.
Have we learned yet that if then the child that's a mamzer would pater?
No, because that's the second part of the Mishnah. Okay. That's the second part. So we're jumping ahead a little bit. Correct. We're taking that for granted because the Mishnah said it, but we have not established where we know that from yet. The Achiv Hulachol Davar. And I will say, this mamzer, so remember again, going back to our previous case, Yaakov's married to Leah, they have a child, Reuven, kosher child, but Yaakov also committed adultery, had another mamzer, Shimon, not another mamzer, had a mamzer, Shimon, right? Now Reuven and Shimon are brothers, so the Mishnah says that they're achiv l'chol davar, they're brothers for all matters. L'mayhoch, so what do you mean? L'yarsho, and I will say, this means again, that for example, in the event that, let's say, Shimon the mamzer dies, and he has the closest surviving relative is who? Is his paternal brother Reuven, that Reuven will go ahead and inherit him. Or the Tamilah, Bosei, listen to this, here's a great trap. The Tamilah, Bosei, let's say again, Yaakov is a Kohen. So now what happens? He marries Leah, and they have a son, Reuven. Reuven is a Kohen. But it also happens to be that what? That Yaakov has an extramarital affair, has a mamzer, Shimon. Shimon dies. Now remember again, if you're a Kohen, you are not permitted to become Tamei Meis, except for who? The seven close relatives, a mother, father, brother, sister, son, daughter, wife. Now Nebuch, Shimon dies. The kasha is, could Reuven, who's a Kohen, go to the Levaya for his mamzer brother? So the Gemara says, yes, he can, he's his brother. That's what it means, he's his brother, the whole davar, even the time. What's the pshita? Achivu. I don't understand, what's the chiddush in that? Of course, again, Reuven and Shimon are brothers. The fact that Shimon is a mamzer doesn't change the fact that they share the same father, and therefore, the mice, of course, they become tamei. I'll tell you why the Gemara says no. Sakadei tchamina hoiluksiv ki'im l'sherah karavei lover. Also, listen to this. The pasuk by the Kohen that gives him the permission to defile himself for the close relative says that who could he go ahead and defile himself for? Ki'im l'sherah HaKarovei Lav. Now, we'll say, now, who does this refer to? This is a very ambiguous pasuk. Only to his She'er, his extension, who is close to him. V'amarmar, who is this? She'ero zo ishto. This refers to the fact that the Kohen is permitted to become Tamei for his own wife if she dies. Uksiv, and the pasuk says, lo yitamei bal ba'amov leheichalo. Yet the pasuk says that, literally translated, a husband may not become defiled within his nation for someone who is profane. What does that mean? Yesh baal shemetame, v'yesh baal she'in metame. There are sometimes that a husband could become tummy for his wife, and there are times that a husband cannot become tummy for his wife. Hakeit said, what's the case? Metame hu li'ishto k'sheira. Rabbi said, when could a kohen attend the levaya of his wife? That's only when what? When it was a legal marriage. When the Kohen was permitted to marry to this woman, the imatam li'ishto, but there are other times when he cannot become tamei for his wife. When is that? Psula. Rabbi said, let's say a Kohen marries a grusha, a Kohen marries a divorcee. He is not, that was an illegal marriage. If she dies, technically, he is not permitted to become tummy. He's not permitted to attend her levaya. So just like we see for a Kohen, that's what? That is only able to attend to levaya of his wife when what? When the marriage was a legal one, I would say, perhaps we'd say the same thing by his brother, that I'm only permitted, if I'm a Kohen, I'm only permitted to become tummy for who? For a brother who is kosher. Right, but for a brother who is not kosher, i.e. a mamzer, perhaps I can't attend his levaya. Kamashmala, no. Kamashmala, we don't say that. And a brother is a brother is a brother, even if he's a mamzer, and I'm still permitted to go ahead and attend his levaya. Ve'ima hachinami, but I don't understand. Meaning, why not? Why not? Just because you say no, you can't. Yeah, maybe not. Maybe you should be able to attend his levaya. Gemara is a very interesting answer. And this is also an interesting idea in family dynamics. Awesome. La'afuke kayama. So your boss said, here's the difference. When the Kohen is married to a woman who he's not permitted to be married to, what's his obligation? He has to divorce her. There is the ability to dissolve that bond. Therefore, once she dies, the bond has been effectively dissolved and it can't be matami for her. However, hacha achivu. Let's say, but you know what? Your brother is your brother. even if he's a mamzer. Right? And we'll say, an incredible, no, the truth is, so the Gemara essentially says is, Lamaisa, he's your brother, meaning that there are certain things you could change, certain things you can't change. Who you're married to, you can absolutely change that. Who you're actually related to, you can't change that. Therefore, again, the fact that I can't become tummy to my wife, who is usher to me, I understand that because that bond is dissolvable. But my brother, he's my brother no matter what his circumstances are. Therefore, again, I am permitted to become tummy. I'll say, so it's an incredible Yisrael and family dynamics. You know, some person has to realize that often there's levels, there are always levels of dysfunction within every single family. Sometimes there are heightened levels of dysfunction. Sometimes it's very important to try to work that familial dysfunction out for one simple reason, that no matter how much friction there is, that person will always be related to you, right? Even if you choose not to talk to them, not to be in contact with them, they will always be related to you. So it's that bond is an unbreakable bond. So it's kedai, if possible. Not every situation can be worked out, but if possible, it's kedai to try to work it out, because that you're in it with that person until 120. So therefore, I'll say what comes out second you start from the Mishnah is that lamaisa, again, we've now established that a mamzer brother is your brother for yibum purposes. Your mom's your brother is your brother for Yerusha purposes, and your mom's your brother is your brother either even for what? Even for Tumah purposes. That if you're a Kohen and that mom's your brother dies, the surviving brother is permitted to go to the Levaya of the mom's your brother. The exception, of course, is what? If the father, so again, remember, going back to our case, if Yaakov fathered a child with either a Gentile woman or a Shifcha, that son, the product of that union, is not my brother. My time, Amakra Ha'isha V'Yiladeh T'Yiladoneha. Why Rabbi say? Because Lamais, again, he's only quoting over here in the Shifcha. We'll see for the Avedas Kochavim differently. But for the Shifcha, the Torah explicitly says that what? The offspring of a Shifcha belong to who? Belong to the Adon, which means, again, that they have no link to the father of those children. So the Gemara goes weiter. The Gemara says, So remember again, the Mishnah also said that if someone has a son, the existence of any kind of son exempts the widow from Yibum, meaning even if that son is not hers, that's not her child, but her deceased husband had any kind of son, she's exempt from Yibum. So the Gemara says, what does this come to include? It comes to include another mamzer case. That Rabbi say, even if the man, now deceased man, fathered a mamzer, that the existence of that mamzer exempts his widow from yibum. My time, the amar kra ubein ein lo ayin alav. Rabbi says, very interesting, because the pasuk says, if a man dies, ubein ein lo, he doesn't have a son. So the Gemara is a little of interesting drasha. Ayin could be ein could be vocalized as how? As ayin. Ayin means investigate him. What does it mean, investigate him? See if he has any offspring. Any offspring, even what? Even illegal offspring. If there is any offspring in existence, then by definition, that will exempt the widow from Yibum. The Chayiv, what? No, we'll see. We're going to get into that. Right now, it's phrasing it as a son. We're going to see if it applies to other children as well. The Chayiv Amakaso. And again, Lemaise, if I have this son, any son, if that son hits me, then he is chayiv. Am I? Why? Well, so now the Gemara is playing this out. So now we know it's referring to a mamzer. So what happens? Ruvain, when I ask him, Yaakov, father is a mamzer. So now what the Mishnah tells me is, if that mamzer, we're calling him Shimon, remember, if Shimon the mamzer goes ahead and hits his father, say he's chayiv, or curses his father, he's chayiv for that. So you want to ask something, am I? Why should Shimon be chayiv if he curses or hits his father? After all, Kari Kana could see over here, V'nasi ba'amcha lo sar. The Torah says that the Nasi, the king of your people, you should not go ahead and curse. And I will say, we go ahead and we endarshan that to mean what? Ba'ose ma'ase amcha. Rabbi say, when are you chayiv for cursing the Nasi? Only if what? Only if he's ba'amcha. Only if he's in the nation. What does it mean he's in the nation? He conducts himself according to the behavior of Klal Yisrael. But if he does not conduct himself according to the behavior of Klal Yisrael, then what? Then you are not chayiv for cursing. And I will say, this becomes a paradigm. this becomes a parallel. If you look at Rashi, listen to this. So the Gemara says that this creates a paradigm for respecting authority. That when is there an obligation to respect authority? When authority itself is towing the Judaic line. But if the authority itself is living outside of the confines of the law, then there is not an obligation to honor and respect. You're not permitted to necessarily disrespect, but there's not an obligation. So the Gemara says like this.
What does it do to the father?
Oh, because again, the kibud aveim falls in this same idea. If the father himself is not osei maase amcha, if he's not towing the line judaically, then lemaise again, there's no obligation to mechabit him. So Gemara says over here, let's analyze this. Shimon is the result of what? Shimon is the result of his father's immoral activity. So obviously, again, the father is an immoral individual. The father is an immoral individual, so why should Shimon be obligated and be mechabit his father? Which means, again, if Shimon hits or curses his father, he should not be chayiv. Kedam Rav Pinchas, Mishred Rav Papa, ba'osa tshuva. Hachanami kishasa tshuva. What's the case of here? It's true. Yaakov fathered a mamzer. People make mistakes, but what? He did tshuva, and now that he's a penitent, ultimately, again, his son, even the mamzer's son, is obligated to mechabit him. Sigmar says, 1 second, the high bar tshuva, is a person who fathered a mamzer ever capable of doing tshuva? V'hatran, we learned, Shimon ben Manasi, Omer, Shimon Manasi says, Ezo muvosh lo yuchal iskon. Rabbi says, what's an example of something that is crooked, that cannot be made straight? Zeha ba'ala erva, v'holid mimena mamzer. Rabbi says, so what's an example of something you can't undo? Mamzer, very nice, you're sorry, but you can't do real tshuva, because at the end of the day, you mamish created a mamzer. To which the Gemara says, hashta miha osemas amchor. Rabbi says, you know, it's true. Once you create a mamzer, you can never undo that act. But it doesn't mean what? It doesn't mean you can't do tshuva. You can't do complete tshuva, right? Your tshuva will always be incomplete because there is always the fallout and the remnant of your sin that you cannot undo. But it doesn't preclude you from doing some level of tshuva. I could still go ahead and be sorry. Therefore, again, the Gemara is saying over here that when is it that a mamzer is chayev for hitting or cursing his father? That's only when what? That's only when the father was chozer b'tshuva to the best of his ability. But if the father wasn't chozer b'tshuva, then eino chinami, the son would not be bound by the laws of kibud aveim. So the Gemara goes weiter. Turn rabbanan. Haba alachos avihi bas eshe saviv. Well, it's another interesting case. If someone has relations with his sister, and she is also the daughter of his father's wife. Now, Bosai, it's irrelevant for our conversation over here whether or not that they also share the same mother. For our purposes right now, what matters most is they share the same father, and this girl also happens to be the daughter of his father's wife. Okay, so the Gemara says, Chayiv mishum achoson, or mishum basavos. So Rabbanan paskin, that you're chayiv for two things. You're chayiv, number one, for relations with your sister, and number two, for the daughter of your father's wife. That's the opinion of the Rabban. Rabbi Yossi ben Yehuda says, no, eino chayiv ele mishum achoson bilvad, velo mipnei bas eshes aviv. Rabbi Yossi ben Yehuda says, no, you're only chayiv for relations with your sister, but you're not chayiv for relations with the daughter of your father's wife. So Gemara analyzes these two shitos. My time, Ayu, Rabbanon. What's the logic of the Rabbanon? Why did the Rabbanon say this? That you're chayav for both. Amri michti, ksiv erva sachos chabas avicha basimecha. The pasuk says, she the erva of your sister, the daughter of your father, or the daughter of your mother. And the pasuk also says, ervas bas eshes avicha, moledes avicha, achos chahi. Yet the pasuk also says, the erva, the daughter of your father's wife, she was born of your father, she is your sister. Lamali, why do I need that second pasuk? Shmamina lechaivo mishum achoso, umishum bashe eshesaviv. So the fact that the Torah needs to state this twice indicates to us what? That you're chayiv twice, once for relations with your sister, once for relations with the daughter of your father's wife. That's the sheet of the Rabbanon. Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda says, Amar kra achos chahi. The pasuk says, no, an exclusionary phrase, she is your sister, which means what? Mishum achos vata machayvo, you are chayiv for relations with your sister, viata machayvo mishum bas eshes aviv. But you are not chayiv for relations ultimately with who? Ultimately with the daughter of your father's wife. V'rabbanon hayachoschahi my avdili. What did Rabbanon do with the phrase achoschahi? Mi boili lechayvo alachoso bas aviv ubas imo. It comes to obligate you, to make you chayv for what? For relations with your sister, who is the son of both. You share the same father and the same mother. Lomar she'in masir min adin. Because Rabbanon said the Torah does not discuss that pasuk, that case explicitly, and to teach us what. Now you could have learned that out from a kal v'chomer. If you're going to be chayv for what? For relations with a half sister, then all the more so what? You'll be chayiv for relations with a whole sister. But we see from here that what? That we do not derive biblical punishments from kal v'chomers. Therefore, the pasuk needed to say achos chayi. Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Huda, imkei lichtov rachmana, achoscha. Rabbi Yosi says, if that's the case, Torah could have just said achoscha. He lamali. Why does it have to say he? Mishum achoscha atamachayvo, viatamachayvo mishum. To teach that you are only chayiv for relations with your sister, but not chayiv for relations with your father's wife's daughter. But the Rabbanon on the other hand say that what? That Lamaisa, you are, excuse me, even though it said achoscha, you still have to write he. Why? Shelo tamar ba'alma masirim min adin. To teach you that don't think that in other cases you could derive punishments based on a kal v'chomer. I v'chiteima achoscha dekasev rachmana lamali. I then you'll say, but why does it have to say achoscha? To which the Gemara answers very simply, milsa da'asya b'kal v'chomer. Because we'll say sometimes, even though we could have learned something from a kal v'chomer, the Torah still goes out of its way to what? To write it down explicitly in the pasuk. Therefore, kasev rachmanahi. V'Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda, im kein lichtov rachmana la'achoscha, he be'idachkra. And according to Rabbi Yosi Yehuda, what Rabbi Yosi, if that was true, if the Rabbanon was true, then what? That it should have written achoscha hi in the previous pasuk. All right, so we'll stop over here for today. We're pointing out, we're ending off with the Machlokes in Rabbi Yosi Bar Yehuda and the Chachamim, namely in the case if a man has relations with his sister, lemaisa, again, according to the Rabbanon, you are chayiv both for sister as well as the daughter of father's wife. According to the Rabbanon, only chayiv for sister. We'll pick up again with the Machlokes tomorrow. 5:45, Dos Hatzmachos, 6 o'clock.